For WMRA News, I'm Bob Levickin. Louisa County officials have charged a 16-year-old boy with first-degree murder and the gunshot slaying of an elderly man and with wounding the man's wife. The owner of a zoo in Winchester, where more than 100 animals were seized earlier this year, has been charged with animal cruelty. And we visit a tiny community in the Chesapeake Bay in danger from rising waters due to climate change. This is the WMRA Daily for Thursday, November 14. Louisa County officials have charged a 16-year-old boy with first-degree murder. He is accused of shooting an elderly man to death and wounding the man's wife during a home invasion. The boy is charged in the gunshot slaying of 82-year-old Roger Wood Payne, Jr., and aggravated malicious wounding in the shooting of 73-year-old Nancy Payne. The boy is also charged with armed robbery and breaking and entering with the intent to commit murder and robbery. The boy was arrested in Nelson County and is being held without bond after a Wednesday hearing in Louisa County Juvenile and Domestic Relations Court. His name is not being released because he is a juvenile. Sheriff's investigators said Nancy Payne has undergone surgery and remains hospitalized at the University of Virginia Medical Center. The owner of a zoo in Winchester, where more than 100 animals were seized earlier this year, has been charged with animal cruelty. A grand jury in Winchester indicted Keith Wilson, owner of Wilson's Wild Animal Park, on 46 animal cruelty counts. Wilson's nephew, Christian Dalacqua, is also facing charges. The Animal Law Unit of Virginia's Attorney General's office seized nearly 120 animals in August amid concerns of inadequate care. Federal inspectors have cited the zoo multiple times for violations. A judge refused to return the animals to the zoo after a 12-hour hearing held this year in which authorities presented evidence that animals received insufficient food, water, and living space. Thousands of rape kits that were backlogged for years in Virginia are finally now getting tested, and the Attorney General's office says the first DNA match has been made, connecting a potential suspect to the assault of a minor back in 2012. These are the first charges filed as a result of the initiative. Megan Pauley with VPM News reports.
Virginia's backlog of rape kits, also called PERC kits, grew until lawmakers in 2016 ordered all of them to be tested. That includes all backlogged kits and new ones. Attorney General Mark Herring and the Department of Forensic Science have been leading the effort to make sure they're all tested. Officials say the first charges have been filed since the Rape Kit Testing Initiative launched. A 26-year-old Spotsylvania man has been charged with assaulting a minor after his DNA was identified with a national database. This is just one of a number of efforts going on in Virginia to make sure there isn't a backlog anymore. The state created a new website this year so survivors of sexual violence can track their case. The system will be mandatory for Virginia agencies to use next summer. Megan Pauley, WMRA News.
As the price of housing skyrockets in areas with good schools, children who live in areas with low-cost housing are stuck with low-performing schools, and Virginia Public Radio's Michael Pope has that story.
Children in Virginia who are growing up in subsidized housing are more likely to live near low-performing schools, says Spencer Shanholtz at the Weldon Cooper Center for Public Service at UVA. He recently looked at the relationship between lower-cost housing and higher-performing schools, and he found a mismatch.
We naturally place affordable housing, you know, subsidized by the government, in areas with low-performing schools. We put them in areas that aren't, you know, don't have high-performing schools.
The solution, he says,
put that subsidized housing in areas where schools are proficient, which is naturally where housing is more expensive.
Shadows compared median housing values to the school proficiency index as measured by the Department of Housing and Urban Development. That revealed a key disparity, one he says could be addressed by making affordable housing more available in places with good schools.
You can work from the education side and try and bring up the schools in those areas where the homes are less affordable, but then you could also argue that that would naturally bring up the prices in those regions as well.
Ultimately, he says children in lower-cost housing should be able to attend good schools. Michael Pope.
In Norfolk on Wednesday, Virginia officials announced a long-term plan to increase the state's international exports. Governor Northam called it the first-ever statewide strategic plan for international trade. Virginia Public Radio's Mallory Nopain reports.
Citing an ongoing trade war at the federal level, Governor Northam says it's time for states to take matters into their own hands.
We are prioritizing international trade, and we aim to reach the 95% of the world's consumers who live outside of the United States.
State leaders already go on regular international trade missions, bringing along Virginia companies. Secretary of Agriculture and Forestry Bettina Ring says part of the plan is making sure small and medium-sized businesses are able to get in on that action.
We have global partners and consultants that can help them vet certain companies to make sure they're legitimate companies to work with. And being able to provide more resources there than we have in the past will, I think, make a difference.
Ring says businesses all over the state should benefit, but Virginia's rural economies have the most to gain because they rely more heavily on exports. I'm Mallory Nopain.
Another Republican has entered the 2020 Senate race against Democrat Mark Warner. Former Georgetown basketball player Omari Faulkner launched a new ad describing his career, including his time as a special envoy for the U.S. State Department.
My inner athlete has always challenged me to be a better father, teacher, civil servant, coach, and a better American.
Former Congressman Scott Taylor has also announced a bid against Warner. Warner narrowly beat Republican Ed Gillespie for re-election in 2014. Finally today, you've probably heard of Tangier. That's the island of 450 residents in danger of being swallowed by the Chesapeake Bay. But just a few miles away, the tiny town of Saxis, whose population is about half of Tangier's, is quietly facing many of the same problems. Virginia Public Radio's Pamela D'Angelo went there to find out how climate change is affecting that community.
It's late morning on a Friday at the Saxis Island Museum, and five men are gathered in a half circle, sitting in plastic chairs and drinking coffee from travel mugs.
I pump my septic tank every 4 years, and I do it during every presidential election. It reminds me it is 4 years.
Saxis sits just off the Chesapeake Bay on Pocomoke Sound. Across the sound is Crisfield, Maryland, where you can just make out the town's new wind turbine. It's a sign of changing times for M.K. Miles, a descendant of Saxis watermen. He returned home after an engineering career.
When I worked for the Corps of Engineers in Norfolk, Virginia in the 70s, we did a tidal study around the area and realized at the time sea levels rising by a foot a century in the lower Chesapeake Bay. Now they say it's rising a foot and a half a century. It's speeding up. So depends on where you are, you just do the math.
Strictly speaking, Saxis is not an island, according to the book Almost an Island by Kirk Mariner. But come high winds and tides, the community is shut off from the rest of Accomack County. Retired schoolteacher Yvonne Hickman stops by and joins the conversation. She blames some of the town's problems on fewer wetlands absorbing flood impacts and calls out people who have recently moved to Saxis and cut wetland plants for better views and access to water.
We wish that most people, if they want to go to the beach, do like we did in my day. You cut a path and you have a path to go to the beach. But, you know, to just cut everything down, I think it's destroying our town.
Hurricane Sandy was a game changer for Saxis. Trees are permanently bent, shorelines eroded. Hickman takes me to the tiny cemetery where her parents are buried to show me damage first caused by Sandy and now more frequent flooding. A grave near her parents has caved in.
My parents has been gone like 40-some years. And when we had Sandy, that's the first time they went underwater. And that's because all that land had been completely cleared, so the water had nowhere to go.
Saxis is mostly marshes and homes. Its highest point is 8 feet above sea level, 3 feet higher than Tangier Island. On a golf cart tour of the town, Miles points out street drains that overflow during higher tides and storms because the ditches they go to are blocked by marsh growth. The only road to Saxis from the mainland goes underwater at least once a month.
If you don't mind driving through 3 or 4 inches of water, you can always get to the island. But once you get into town here, it can be a foot deep on the road.
Visitors call ahead to residents about the tides. Residents time grocery shopping and going to church accordingly. Sometimes the school bus can't make the crossing. Miles shows me his unofficial tide indicator, a plaster buoy with a fishing pole placed at the edge of a tiny pier. The statue's feet dangle a foot or so above the water.
His feet get wet every high tide, but when it gets up above his feet, maybe up to his knees, that's when the high tide's high enough to come across the causeway.
Miles points out homes that have been raised, or as he calls it, jacked up. After Hurricane Floyd, FEMA paid 75% toward raising houses about 7 feet. Homeowners only paid 5%, and the state picked up the rest.
After Sandy, no such deal's ever been offered yet. They're still trying to offer such a deal. That one's never jacked. Somebody still is.
On the southern end of Saxis is a conundrum. Every 7 years or so, the Army Corps of Engineers dredges the harbor channel. Keeping the town harbor open contributes to erosion and flooding on the north end by disrupting the natural flow of sand that used to build up on the town's northern shoreline. But with no dredging, Saxis watermen would lose access to their livelihood. From the town of Saxis, I'm Pamela D'Angelo.
For WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicky. Thanks for listening and enjoy your Thursday.